Comedy Fix Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about comedy and we try to fix it to the best of our abilities, oftentimes failing in the face and in the public eye. My name, of course, is Jamie Parkin, and I'm here with my two co-hosts and best friend, Sam Miller and Chris Alvarado. Welcome, gentlemen.
Of course.
Thank you, best friend.
Absolutely.
What are we talking about today, dude?
Well, today we're talking about initiations, and gosh, where do we start?
With initiations!
Could we label this a workshop episode?
I think we should label it a workshop episode aspirationally and hope to achieve that.
You know what, Jamie, you're absolutely right. I shouldn't have said anything now. And had we workshopped some stuff, it would have been a workshop. Had we not, it would have just been initiation. Now, you're right, aspirationally. I've ruined everything. What were you going to say?
I was going to say this will be an aspirational workshop. we want to see, we want to discuss different kinds of initiations. There's a lot of lore out there about different kinds of initiations and the efficacy and what track those will put you on. And I think we want to just dive in. Maybe we'll put some on their feet. It could be difficult because a lot of my initiation training happens to be in physicality. And so that might not translate well on a podcast, but we certainly can play around with whatever does come our way. Chris, yeah. How do you teach your students initiations? Where do they start?
So for me, the way – it's so funny, guys. It's so funny. I think about this podcast a lot, and I think about who I have become over the last year or so, who I have become since working with you guys, and how a lot of what I thought was my locked-in philosophy has either completely vanished or has – started to like morph and become something else, which I heard Chad Damiani, God, why can't I say his last name, mentioned somewhere, like, if you aren't evolving with your students as a teacher, like, what are you doing? Anyway, so you know, my locked in approach in the training center used to be like, we got to get out that who, what, where. We got to get out the who, what, where in the initiation. We must. And I'm sure everybody knows what I'm talking about, but just a quick, who you are, where you are, so the location of the scene, and at least the beginnings of what's going on. And so we typically will run an exercise called three-line scene, which I'm sure everybody is familiar with, which is where two players say three lines total. Player one will say one line, player two will say the second line, player one will say the third line, in the hopes of getting all the information out in those first three lines. And you could even do it in one line. Here's an example of I'm making it up right now, of the who, what, where in one line. Dad, yeah, I know my room is a mess, but I still want to borrow the car. Okay, we know who they are, father and son. We know where they are, the son's bedroom. We know what's going on. He wants to borrow the car. Now, this used to be so important to me. I mean, even saying it now, I feel like it's so stupid. But the idea was so that especially students knew this stuff, because sometimes what happens is you get a scene going along one third, two thirds of the way through the scene, and somebody thinks that they're talking to their wife while the other person thinks they're talking to their mom or whatever, right? And so that gets confusing. Or we know that a scene is different if it takes place in the bathroom of a gas station than if it does just, in your living room. So those things kind of change it. So that's the way I used to teach initiation. We're like, let's come out with some information. That's one way, because there's also the initiations based off of openings and the initiations in the previous scenes. Sam Miller, when you hear initiation, what comes to mind?
Oh, well, I love the different kinds of initiations. And I think I learned a lot of this from like Brian O'Connell. There's like the half idea initiation, where you don't really have all of that information. Maybe all I have is dad, right? And then we'll use those other lines to unpack it as an initiation. And then he'll also talk about like the fully formed idea initiation, which is kind of what you are going for, or maybe like, you know, pulling a premise out of an opening kind of a thing.
Well, and you know, Sam, that's reminiscent of the way UCB teaches. They for their initiations, it's full premise, partial or half premise, or no premise. So yeah. That's interesting to say, yeah, to use that is the same. I think it's the same idea, right?
I think that is kind of very similar. And Jamie was shaking his head no the second you said who, what, where.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have both been shook by Jamie's rejection of exposition. And I will say that this is not just an improv challenge. There's a lot of joke in sort of like the TV comedy community when you're writing a pilot of like, well, Brenda, I know you've been my sister for the last 17 years, but would you just pass me the salt? Where you're just letting on so much knowledge because you have to get it out there, but you're not doing it in a subtle way. And I think Jamie likes to start very subtle with his physicality, which doesn't really give us a who, a what, or a where, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It may not even be a physicality, but I do generally reject...
when you initiate a scene by standing there, is that what you're sort of saying? You're just there?
Well, I guess technically that could be a physicality because I am existing on that stage.
It's so true.
In some sense, that is true.
I mean, that's what Peter Brook says in The Empty Stage. All you need is an actor on a stage and an audience, and that's it. That's an initiation.
Well, then what is everybody doing with all this who, what, where bullshit, right? because that's kind of, I mean, when I look at initiations, one thing, and I try to be pretty open-minded to other people's way of performing improv, but what I hate is the high context, high exposition of 99% of improv scenes where they're trying to get out the who, the what, the where. And it just, to me, looks like uncertain improvisers trying to do a scene. And I don't like that. I don't care for that. I would like the scene itself, the concept itself of a half idea or a half premise or whatever you were just saying, Sam, about Brian O'Connell's his verbiage. The problem with that to me is that it implies an idea of the scene. And it's like, we're here to unpack it for you, as opposed to the entire scene is the exploration, is the discovery of what the idea is, not a showing of what the idea is. And yeah. So I think that slight tweak is, I think, maybe the difference between exposition heavy and anti-expositional.
But, you know, I think that's okay if you're doing a Folly show. It's a little different if you're doing, I'm going to say it, if you hear this word, you have to drink, the Herald. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking at second beats in the Herald, especially UCB specific, we've gone over this before, but there is the formula and there is an expectation, not from the audience by any means, maybe, but like, you know, within the confines of the form that certain things are going to be brought back or we're going to hit a game, right? We're going to heighten a game that we found in the first. Now that can, the relationship and the location can change, but it behooves you as a Herald performer at the UCB in a second beat to get out that information so your partner knows, you know, in where we're playing this game and who we are to play it with. I'm just saying that's, it is beneficial in that setting if you're trying to color within the lines.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct. That like, if you are trying to play game hard, if you're trying to improvise a sketch show, the sooner that you can get the concept of what the sketch is about out. And so I'd even go maybe one step further than like who, what, where. I'd maybe even go like who, what, where, weird, right? Is like in that first line, you'd maybe even want to give some kind of indication of like what's the weird thing going on. Like, Grandma, I can't believe you're doing a keg stand at my frat party, right? Like that's...
Listen, for sure. Especially, I mean, I remember auditioning at UCB, which I auditioned for 5 years in a row for a Herald team. Never made it. Which is weird because I'm one of the best improvisers in the country.
But you're not funny.
Anyway, well, it's funny. Funny you say that because somebody sent me an email yesterday, a fan of ours, Carl. I'll just say his name because Carl. I don't need to give all of his information. He said he sent me a link to a video which I posted on my Instagram, which I hadn't seen in a while. It was an initiation, as a matter of fact, the start of a scene I did for a show, and he says, if you keep saying you're funny, you probably shouldn't do this kind of work or something to that effect. It made me feel really good about myself. That was just a fun little moment. I am funny sometimes. Yeah. What's happening? Hold on. Wait, I was going to say something. Oh, yes. Auditioning. Part of the audition process. So I know this is different from performance because it's just completely different. But it's because you need to tell and show the adjudicators in the room that you understand the format, you understand game. So Sam, what you're saying, it's very important to let your scene partner know this is the game we're playing, because game if not fully defined in that first scene, can have a couple different variations. You think the game is sitting down. I think the game is sitting in is chairs. I think I meant, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, where in one scene it seems like, okay, that's fine. But as you begin to heighten, that changes. So yes, you come out and you go, Dad, you're in my room sitting on my chair. You know what I mean? Like, Jamie's so disgusted. But like, I remember specifically being on the back line of a UCB audition, being like, I got to let everybody in this room know, including my scene partner, know what the specific game we are playing, which is a terrible way to perform, by the way. Terrible way. I always felt fucking choked. I felt choked. Okay. And then, you know, it's always fun, even Jamie, even when I'm teaching the who, what, where, the full premise, partial premise, it is fun to see those scenes where somebody has no idea. Now, you like to go in there with no idea, or maybe, I don't know, you have a kernel of something. But when you see a student, they usually don't like the free fall of improvisation, which is funny because that's kind of the beauty of it. They like a little more structure. And so when they come out and they have nothing, they have absolutely nothing, I think that's a beautiful moment. And I always say, just go, right? Well, I can just go, my car is a mess. And that's enough, mm-hmm. right? We know that. I can say anything in the world and that's enough. But they want to get it right. They want to say the best initiation that's ever been said in the history of the world, right? They want to make it interesting. They want to make it funny and entertaining. That's why they freeze. Can you imagine? Can you imagine having to do all that in delivering an initiation?
Yeah, I've been asked to do that before. But I will say, like, when we workshop stuff, we'll often do that legwork. We'll say, like, okay, you're two people in a grocery store who are friends, right? So, like, we understand how helpful that can be to just sort of get something going. And I think that's a lot of the appeal of short form for an audience, because we're talking about the improvisers on the stage, but, like, it's also super important for the audience to at least have some kind of an idea what's going on in the scene. And so while Jamie rejects all representational art in any form whatsoever, I do think that there are a lot of practical reasons why you might want to get this information out early. You might want to repeat it. You might want to say, Dad, you're sitting in my chair a couple of times.
You know what? I'm gonna jump in before Jamie can even speak here, because, dude, Sam, you're my boy. You're my baby boy. I love you. I respect you. And oftentimes agree with you. I'm off this fucking, I'm off this train.
You know, you've changed.
I'm off this train. I just don't care anymore. That's just not what's important to me anymore. Maybe because I'm not doing Herald anymore. You know, though, Sam, in my workshops, for the last 2 weeks in a row, for our first warm-up scenes, I have been giving them that information just for fun, just for exercise. I tell them who they are. I tell them where they are. I even give one of them the first line of dialogue, which is that groundling style, the Cooking with Gas show. And it's been fun. It's been fun just to see that. Jamie,
is that the Cooking with Gas show? Wait, I didn't know that. So every show starts with, now you're cooking with gas.
No, they don't. Wait, you're joking. You're joking.
I don't know. I haven't seen the show.
Well, I got to do this show. It was the best, one of my favorite times performing ever. And the audience gives you all that input. And what's funny is, this is really, I'm sure I've said this here, but I just want to say it again. The audience thinks they're giving you a lot of work to do. Like, okay, like, you know, your name is Paul. You're in a laundromat. You're mad. And your first line is, where are my quarters? And they're like, you know, all laughing. Like, how is he going to do this? While the improviser is like, dude, you just did all my work for me. Mm-hmm. This is easier. So Jamie, what about one of the big rules in improvisation, in scene work in general, but specifically with initiations, is don't start off with asking a question. Don't start off with asking a question. What does that do for you when you hear that?
Nothing. I mean, why not start off asking a question? This is maybe an opportunity to do a scene.
It's an aspirational workshop. I think Jamie and Chris, let's put you guys in a scene together. Great. In the spirit of the show, we are not going to give you any information about what scene you're going to do, but we are going to require that you, whoever initiates with a question.
Love it. Love it.
So what's this scene about?
Okay, well, here's what I have so far. it's just a beaded script. I just have the beats. I don't have the full thing. But the first scene is going to be where they fall in love. I say we just started off, boom, right out of the gate. Okay, people love that, and we're making a movie here, right? I mean, I know we're in my garage, but I mean, we're still making a movie, right?
God. Yeah, I guess we're making a movie, but maybe we can turn down the exposition a little bit.
Okay, end scene.
That's three lines.
Okay, so part of that is Jamie being a jerk by saying what's the scene about. Talk to me, Sam.
Well, I mean, you know, Jamie really enjoys this, as do I, when you can make a meta comment that works on two levels, right? So, yes, he is taking the inspiration of you guys doing a scene, but someone might actually say in real life sometime, what is the scene about? So you took that in a great way where you're a writer and you're working on a project, and so you're going to talk about the first scene, but you went one step too far for Jamie.
Well, I did that on purpose
because
of the way he started the scene. So he did something I didn't like. I'll do something he doesn't like. And that's the way improv should be done, everybody. Well, you know, Jamie.
God, I love that.
You know, Jamie, actually, you know, what's the scene about is actually not as bad as, not that I think it's terrible, but a lot of people will go like this. They'll go, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to do one more scene with Sam right now. And Sam, I'm going to start it off. I'm going to be the one to initiate. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what? What do you want to tell me?
I love you. And I've always loved you.
That's why you brought me out to your RV?
Yeah, Chris. I mean, I couldn't tell you in school.
You know, I don't have time for this, Sam. I'm writing a movie with Jamie.
It breaks my heart that you're doing okay, that see, with Jamie.
Nope, I don't.
Our part, my acting notwithstanding.
It is a little tough for beginning improvisers to have to answer that question.
Well, I'll say this. When you are talking about, Chris, that you are moving away from who, what, where, and exposition as your initiation, one thing that constantly gets talked about in improv that we don't really talk about with initiations always, it kind of comes as a second note, is emotion. And you could always initiate with some level of emotion, and it doesn't even matter what you say then.
Sam, in my class the other day, these two people were silent for the first 3 minutes of the scene. And then homeboy took his ring off. And she just said, no, please, scene. Oof. Oh, even Jamie Parkinson can feel that shit, dude. Oh, I mean, I love that.
Yeah.
It's all emotion. I mean,
it's not getting you on the UCB Herald team.
It's not going to get me on the UCB Herald team. So there,
but it's pretty good.
You know, people often talk about initiating with an emotion or, like Jamie said, a physicality. Mm-hmm. I'm a big physical player. I love initiating with the physicality, but not even one that I'm coming up with, just one that I just reach out or step into. That's a really fun initiation for me.
Like, yeah. But I would expand that to all initiations where you're not saying I'm making a salad as you're tossing the lettuce in the bowl, right? Because that's the exposition. Reach out with your lines into the unknown and just say, I'll have three oysters, one of them cold.
Yeah.
Who knows what the fuck any of that means, but that's the excitement and interest of it, right? So it's the same kind of thing that I would encourage us. I mean, Sam was talking about representational art. I'm okay with that, but I don't want it to be the baby form where it's like, Dad, you've been my dad for 30 years now, and every day you come home and microwave the soup for me after you get job, you know, home from your job at the factory. Like, that's baby steps representational art as opposed to patriarchy. Can we finish talking about the socioeconomics in the bathroom? Like, that's representational art, right? It's like, I'm talking to my dad. No, I'm talking to my patriarchy, right? Like, that's representational art that I would find interesting. Mm-hmm. So, like, take it to that next level and get really, like, Brechtian with it.
Well, I mean, if our goal is improvised work that you could put on a stage for an audience that might not know that it's improvised, right? That it's at the level of a scripted play or anything else. I think we have to push for that level. And, you know, I probably have some notes on it anyways, but like we have to push for at least that kind of level of exciting interest, right? I mean, I think we're talking about like the training wheels initiation versus, yeah, what is that advanced improviser initiation where I just grunt and that's the start of the scene?
Well, yeah, that's a big part, Sam. It's like when Jamie talks about the, oftentimes, not always, but when Jamie talks about the things he doesn't like in a show, in a performer, in this case, in an initiation, it sounds like he's watching the C-minus squad at the clubhouse. Like, you know, I think some of the better, not all, I think some of the better improv teams and performers don't do this fucking, this like training wheels style, you know?
Mm-hmm. C-minus squad is a great name for an improv team, I have to say. Like, if they were at the clubhouse, I might want to check them out.
That's the kind of representational art I'm talking about.
You know, Jamie, I used to go so far with my students to say, I don't even care if it's clunky at the top, just so as long as you two know what's going on, spell it out for me, and then play the scene. Which doesn't make for like beautiful work, but in a training capacity, I've seen it be beneficial. Like, it is weird to say, you're my brother, you know, like that's a weird thing to do, but I kind of let that slide just so that newer improvisers can get the feeling of what it feels like to be on the same page, understand the information. I mean,
I guess the clunkiness of it to me, what bothers me about it is that it feels like it's bringing out things that are not in the room with us, as opposed to if it's two people on a stage, make an observation of the moment, you know, just what happens to be your spatial distance between that person, what feels like the tone of the room is, and then build from there, as opposed to bringing out random labels of people or character types to hopefully throw onto the scene.
But in your example, that's just like two people walking out into a space and improvising. Typically, we're doing
scenes. That's what every improv scene is.
Mm. Well, what I was going to say is typically students are doing scenes based off of an opening or information. So they're trying to let their fellow improvisers know maybe where they're pulling this from and what the opening has done for them. Have we done a episode on openings? No, we haven't, have we?
I don't think we have, and I don't think we're going to start now.
I don't think so. But yeah. Oh, are you also mad at me, Sam? Is that what's going on here?
I'm not mad at you. I actually have a question for you, Chris, because I think one of the things that limits the perspective of Jamie and myself is like we haven't been on a long-running team for a long period of time, and you have. And so I'd be curious how you understand initiations with Heyday. Like, does someone have to say, I'm your dad, or is it clear from the way they're playing a character, you're like, oh, that's their dad character. I know they're being my dad right now. Like we have this shorthand with our initiation because I would imagine that's really helpful.
That's a great question. Yeah. I don't recall. I don't think we're saying I'm your dad, that type of stuff, but I am realizing now one of the other big rules of initiations is, or around initiations, it makes me think of my team, is whoever steps out first. They're, that's one of the rules, is they're the ones who are initiating. So, you know, stepping off the back line first is signaling to me or to the other players that they have the idea. So there is that moment, even with Heyday, it's like we all have a million ideas about the opening we had just done, or we're pulling inspiration from that. So I, you know, we kind of like wait to let the person finish to be like, and I will say, Sam, probably maybe a little more clever, maybe, I don't know how to say it, like not necessarily like a positive, but like these players are good, and maybe part of the way they're getting so good is that like it's kind of like seamless. They're kind of like spelling out what it's going to be, what their idea is. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not always, but I think that's pretty typical of the way we play. Shorthand only in that the audience doesn't see it coming because he's not saying I'm your dad, clean your room, but I know this person has an idea, so I'm listening for those key words in the initiation to recognize, oh, I'm a lower status in this, or oh, they want me to be high status, or oh, they're picking up from this thing, so I'm going to do it this way. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of kind of math involved. I don't know if I.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if we can throw this on its feet. Can we do a premise based scene? Like, Chris, I would love for you to give Sam and I an idea, a fully formed scene idea, and then Sam, I'm hoping that we can maybe try to organically get into it. Because I think that's always the problem, is you come in with an idea, and then immediately in the first three lines, there's the idea, and it's been ham-fisted to the audience. And that's kind of my issue, because I'm not against coming into the scene with an idea. Sometimes it happens. But I guess it's how it's done, maybe. And I don't know that Sam and I will be skilled enough to do this, but this is kind of the challenge. Can we organically get into an idea? Can we organically get into a premise? Because usually those are considered two different things. You have organic or you have premise based. Can we mix those?
Yeah, that's tricky. It's funny, as you were saying it, I'm reminded of the maxim, like, one brick at a time, right? Which is the idea that, like, you bring the who, I'll bring the what, you find the where, now we're off and running, kind of a thing. So I do think premise and organic are probably a little at odds, but maybe Chris can pull this off. I'm curious.
But also, it's a little different if I give you the information, because the information is then known. So, for instance, in the case of the Cooking with Gashio at the Groundlings, the person who's running this, you know, talking to the audience is asking for this information. So then I don't need to say I'm in a laundromat. They already told me. So if I give you all that information, you already know you are who you are, right? So then it can be a little more organic. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe, because I'm trying to figure out how to do this via the podcast, which is actually the challenge itself. The scene will be much easier than figuring out how to do the scene. But I think, what if you give us three different locations or something like that, or three different scene ideas, and then maybe Sam and I can organically find our way into it. So it's not like, oh, we know we're going to be in a laundromat and his name is William and he's a barber.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
No.
No. I see what you're going for. Getting there. Yeah.
Getting to the premise organically.
Exactly.
That's what I want, is to get to the premise organically. Because if we can do that, then 99% of the improv shows that I see that I don't care for, I think will be more palatable if people can figure this out.
But you can get to a premise organically. You just have to choose one of the who, what, and the where that doesn't belong. And I learned this trick a while ago. I think I learned it from Jen Kruger when doing like UCB stuff. But I think Will Hines talks about this as well, who I should admit I kind of stole the grandma doing a kickstand from, where it's like, if you do a who, what, and a where that's completely typical, right? It's a dad and a kid and they are supposed to clean the room, right? That's super typical. Flip one of those into its inverse, reverse it. It's a kid telling his dad to clean the room. It's a dad telling the kid to clean his office. Right? Like, any of those things would make it a little gamier or a little bit more of a comedic premise. And so I think you can organically get into a game premise. You just have to break the logic of reality a little bit.
No, you can't. I guess what I'm saying is, can we get it from an opening? Can we get it from a pattern game where it's kind of already built in? We're just playing what was given in the opening, as opposed to, I think what you're saying, Sam, is how do you create a game organically? Which is, am I going crazy here?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah, Sam, you were discussing how to organically find or create game.
And yeah, what's Jamie talking about?
He's not talking about game specifically. He's talking about the premise itself. It doesn't necessarily need to be a comedic premise or like the thing of the scene. I think he's saying, can you two, oh gosh, this is hard. Yeah, can you two... I think it's hard, Jamie? I don't think it is possible. Isn't it? Now, you're both much smarter than I am. But isn't it impossible to do something organically if you already know what the outcome is?
I guess you're slow rolling it so that it's like it has that organic feel and it's not so ham-fisted. Because what bothers me about the context is that it's like, okay, your dad, we're in a supermarket, now let's play. And it feels cheap and easy.
So then we don't need any input. I think you just discover it organically. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, then just step out and do a scene and see if at the end of the scene we have the information. Do you think everyone's tuned out by at this point?
Yeah, totally.
I like how the challenge is like, okay, Sam, you and Jamie have to come out and do a scene, and by the end of it, we should know what's going on. It kind of feels like where we've gotten to.
I know. Well, yeah. No, that is tough. That is tough.
Jamie, why don't you initiate with whatever you would like to initiate with, and I'll volunteer to respond. And I'll try not to respond so much that you shake your head. And then if you feel inspired, no pressure, but if you feel inspired, you could say or do another thing. And then we'll maybe see where we are.
I love this tone that Sam is taking so as not to trigger me with context.
That's right. And furthermore, in the same tone as Samuel, I wonder if maybe the scene could be done not as a joke scene or an FU. Now, I know it's asking too much, Jamie, but I'm just saying if maybe we could try what we would call our classic or standard two-person improvised scene.
You didn't like the scene where we were doing a scene in the garage about the other scene that you and Sam were in?
You know what? No.
What I do want to say about that scene that you and I did, Chris,
yeah.
What I loved about it is that the actors were having a conversation and the characters were having a conversation.
Mm.
And that's a really fun place to be performatively. And when you say the fuck you to the scene, it kind of allows you to have both of those. And then we can have a conversation on two different levels, which then becomes the scene, because then the scene is a metagame. Can they keep this up? Can they both have this conversation as characters and actors? Right. And then that's the scene itself is the meta scene.
That is fun. So, I've seen you two do that, where it's like we're a little unclear if it's the characters having this conversation or Sam and Jamie, and that's always fun. I agree.
But yeah, let's do a traditional scene. I'm going to do the most traditional scene. I'm going to be on the UCB Sunset stage right now.
Okay, terrific.
Now over here, you'll see the gorillas. It's easy to tell a male gorilla from a female gorilla. The males are bigger.
Yeah. I mean, that's a silverback. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the silverback. Now, interestingly, the silverback 125 years ago here in South Africa, there was 10 times as many, dare I say even 11 times as many as there is today. These are going extinct. We have to thank Jehovah for that. Jehovah in his great design has limited the ability for the silverback to continue reproduction.
Dude, you were such a fuck up in school. I can't believe, like, this is your PhD research. That's insane. You sound like a completely different person.
Nobody's on this tour. Nobody wanted to take this tour. Sam, it's just you and I.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was the Yale Great Tour that they canceled. And so I was like, I'm coming on the tour.
Well, we had to cancel because of COVID.
I'm here.
Oh, and then we're here.
Yeah. I wasn't going to miss out on this. I remember watching you snort a line of chalk. Do you remember that? You were like, this chalk looks like powder. Teacher left the room for like 5 minutes and you were like, I mean, I'll never forget that.
What was so crazy to me is that there was just a line of chalk in the middle of the room. It's like he was inviting me. He was just playing mind games with me. Kind of like how you're playing mind games with me now. Is that a baggie you're holding? What's in that baggie?
It is. I brought bananas.
A baggie of bananas.
Yeah, for the gorillas.
You can't put bananas in a baggie. The ethanol is going to make them ripen faster than the... Jehovah did not design for that.
You are so fucking smart.
See, everybody, wasn't that garbage?
I was interested... when you said the Jehovah's great design, I thought that was a cool idea. And I thought Sam was going to play into that. Like maybe that was going to be unusual. Like, hold on. That's not the tour I thought this was going to be. That's not a good thing that they're going extinct. And you would explain, oh, it is a good thing because Jehovah is the Almighty and he's all knowing and has made this happen. Instead, right at that moment, Sam makes this turn to kind of break out of where we thought he was going to go. I'm speaking for everybody now, Sam, and call Jamie out for being different than who you remember him being. that it's, and then Jamie has to kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, it felt like, Jamie, you had to kind of like justify why this would be happening now, rather than just like tour guide who believes in Jehovah, with patron being shocked at this information. Now, Jamie, you have to explain to us and to yourself and to Sam why this situation is occurring, which is, well, because Sam was saying that this is your PhD or your thesis, something like that. And now you have like, well, no one else wanted to come on this tour. And Jamie, yeah, but I mean, Sam, I'm here. So that's, and I'm not against this. I'm not against this. Tell me about your experience in there though. I know you're rolling your eyes there, Jamie, but like, what felt good to you at all?
None of it.
None of it.
And no offense to Sam or to myself. It's just, I think the challenge of it, and I guess I had to rebel against my own distaste because I'm like, oh, I'm playing into a, that's not how I would normally yes. be inclined to play a scene, is to play the context and to explain, to justify. And those are my nemeses in scenes. I like when there's unexplained weirdness and it's left for the audience to figure out. So it's hard for me to play the context game. And frankly, I'm not good at it. It's not a muscle that I've built up, probably because I've just moved away from it so much. So it's, I don't know.
Sam, what did you find anything enjoyable in there?
I find all of improv enjoyable. And if you don't, I don't know why you're
nerd,
there.
Nerd.
I will say I felt bad that I might not have listened as hard as I could have. But I don't know that I want to play the Jehovah game. I will say that much. Like, I don't want to play the religion game. It was fun to have sort of like Jamie lay on a lot of information, and like, that's not how he normally plays. So maybe right. that kind of informed my decision to be like, this isn't who you are a little bit. So, it's fun to get like thrown into something of like, you have something in a bag. Like, what am I going to pull out? That's always fun for me. The discovery there,
you know, Sam, I want to stop you because I think part of like workshopping this, Jamie's initial initiation up until the Jehovah point, it's really funny and like not quote unquote right, not by the book. You said, I don't want to play the Jehovah game. Now in class, you're going to get stopped. Hold on. The unusual thing was laid out for you. And it's funny for you to pick and choose, Sam. Now you two can do that. You play that way. But can you see where in a classroom setting that might have been the point where an instructor goes, wait, as soon as he said that Jehovah gets rid of gorillas and that's a good thing, that's where you need to kind of straight man that. But it's fun for me to watch you, Sam, go, no, not that one. That's a Jamie move, to be like, not interested. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jason Schatz probably informed me on like, it's really the reaction that makes the game. Like, it's what you're reacting to.
Sure,
that
sure.
sets that thing up. And like, I don't know.
No, that's actually, hold on. That's a really good point. Because it does not become unusual unless you think it's unusual. If that is the norm, you also believe that it's a good thing that Jehovah got rid of the gorillas, then it's not unusual. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Observing my own initiation, I think one thing that I do like that I don't know that I've articulated is that when you set up an initiation, rather than give like contextual, verbal, intellectual information, try to create a tone. And so I think that's a fun way to play, because then you create a musicality of the scene. And then I think you can get comedy by breaking it, or you can play into the musicality. So to me, mine was like boring lecture, safari, professorial kind of tone. Mm-hmm. And then Sam brings in like drugs and blah, 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 you know, and that kind of thing. And that's like a clash of tones that I think is an interesting scene.
Check this out. Mm-hmm. In the video that Carl sent to me this week, you can go to my Instagram. That's at Chris Alvarado. It's like, I don't have many videos on there, but this is one of the videos I posted. I had such a strong initiation idea off the back line. Now, granted, this was the Armando style or ASCAT style at West Side Comedy Theater. It's called Pretty Pretty Pony. It's our same. We have a celebrity monologist tell stories based on their lives, and we do scenes based on that, where those scenes tend to be a little more premise heavy because you're trying to tell the audience and your team what you're pulling from the monologue. Now, I had this initiation locked and loaded, But Jamie, like you're saying, I don't want to shove it down my scene partner's throat, who happened to be Joey Greer. I pull out two chairs and I just start driving. And I say, you know what? I had a lot of fun at that party. Now, Joey is a smart improviser. And based on the rule I said earlier, he recognizes I have an idea. So it wouldn't, I mean, he could do whatever he wants to do, but he didn't go like, watch out for the cliff. He was patient enough with me. And then I was like, oh yeah, he says, you got to talk to all those people at the party. And you even talked to that married couple. And then I said the line I wanted to say, which was, I'm so glad you're driving. But I was the one driving. And then he started freaking out. I got a nice big pop from the audience. But I knew getting into that scene, Jamie, that I wanted to say, I wanted to be driving a car and say, I'm so glad you're driving. Now, I will say, that's not how I want to play all the time. That isn't how I want to play all the time. In this scenario where we have a monologist, and that's part of the promise we're making to the audience, is we're going to do scenes based on what you've just heard. And she did a monologue about doing hallucinogenic drugs. You know, I like manufacture that. But I will say it does feel manufactured. But I also will say the pop from the audience and Joey's patience with me setting that up was a really fulfilling moment. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've definitely... First of all, I want to say, because we don't say it enough, how great it is to get feedback from listeners. And like, it is so much fun and such a delight to hear from everybody. It's really cool and makes our week. And I think that's such a great example, Chris, where if you had tried to shove that premise into the first line, it would have failed.
Yes.
And I've certainly been on the other side of that, where I've jumped the weird, sort of say, where like I've tried to throw something weird in there and it really throws everybody off and the whole thing off. It's like, I've heard sort of like 30 seconds or like three lines, kind of like a barometer of like, let them try to get their idea out if it doesn't seem like they fully have it out yet. But I think you played that perfectly. That's great.
But I couldn't have done it without him. But again, that's not how I always want to play. But you know,
how do you
want to
play?
I want to play.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I want one point of inspiration. So Sam, give us a word.
Android.
Hey, I'm going to have to take off.
Hey, you do you. I get it.
Thank you.
Hey, take the keys. Take the keys.
You sure?
Open your hand. Take the keys.
Fuck. Thank you. Dude, thank you.
Hey, do what you gotta do.
I don't feel great, Tom.
No, you take the keys. Take them. Hey, take them. Take those keys.
I'm not in like what I would call a good place right now.
Do what you gotta do.
Give me the keys.
Take them. If you can.
What do you... Give me the keys, Tom.
Hey.
What do you... It's not a fucking joke, man.
Take him.
My mom is in the hospital. She's dying.
Hip.
Sid. Now that's comedy, everybody. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you my honest experience in there. I love that. I enjoy that. Here's what I like about it. I like that I'm setting up a certain tone and a certain feeling, but I really like that Jamie's not... I feel like 9 times out of 10, my scene partner is going to respond in the tone that I'm setting up in an initiation. Be that supports, be that their own, they don't have anything. I'm initiating, so I have an idea. But in this situation, Jamie kind of did his own thing. We found this game with the keys. I'm loving that because I'm not going to stop being heartbroken and shattered while also jumping up and down on my tippy toes trying to get the keys from this guy. That to me is having my cake and eat it too. That's the Venn diagram to me of the emotion, legitimate, like, of it. And then the playfulness, the goofiness of it coming together. I think that would be, I think that's, you know what? That's a great scene. I'm just gonna, all right, everybody. That's how you do a good scene. Sam's not into it. Sam.
You guys aren't making the Herald team. I'm sorry.
We know.
Okay.
That.
All right.
We know that.
I mean, it was fun to watch. Like, you know, it starts a little dramatic and then Jamie enters in a little bit of absurdity by like keeping with the take the keys thing. And then it kind of builds to him being a bit of a trickster character, which is super fun. And that's a little bit of like organically finding a premise, right? Or organically
I'd say so.
Finding a game that you can play.
I'd say so. I'd say so.
Jamie, how was it for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, I think it's kind of what I was saying earlier, is creating that tone up top. And I think having initiation, whether or not it gives context or labels or any kind of relationship, just setting a tone in the room that you can play then with or against. You play with it, you have a dramatic scene. You play against it, you have a comedic scene. There's no wrong way to do it, I guess. So I guess it's about, for me, the initiation should create a tone in the room, regardless of context or exposition. And then the audience can read it, because I don't know who we were. I have no idea what our labeled relationship would have been there.
Oh, you're his boss family. And he's the employee.
But you know what?
Could
but,
be.
But that's one of the scenes where, like we said earlier, I don't give a fuck. I do not care to get that information out. You know, Jamie, on tone, one of the exercises I do a lot when it comes to initiations or just doing starting scenes is I'll just assign a word to either each individual in the scene that the other people don't know or to both of them and just say, make an association, an emotional association to what you're hearing and enter that way. It's kind of cool, dude. It's kind of cool. Again, you're not setting up the who, what, where. The scene has begun and there's already a depth to you because you kind of know how you feel. You're choosing to enter a scene with a feeling based on associating that feeling with some kind of object. If I say switchblade, you might enter a certain way, waterfall, alarm clock. And like, I think that's a nice way to enter a scene. Even if you don't have any idea what's going on or there's no other premise of there, it's nice to walk in what I call like loaded. Like I'm loaded. I already have this feeling.
And you know what I would say too, I would add to that. And I would say about the tone initiation is that it also would work for premise. If you had a premise like keg grandma or whatever Sam's like premise was he was talking about earlier, you can come in and you set that keg tone and then come in with grandma, you know, like I think it is about setting a tone rather than necessarily, because then if it's not actually about keg grandma, you still have those competing frat boy energy with senior citizen nursing home energy. And that's where you're going to get the comedy. So I think it's more about energies and tones than it is about the expositional labels.
Like, yeah, what's being said specifically. Yeah.
Right. Because you can play that with you know, noises in and of itself. It's like, oh, da, 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 da. You can play that same game. If you can reduce your game, your comedy to tone, to musicality, I think, I don't know. Maybe I'm going off on a tangent.
No, you know what's interesting to me, Jamie, is when you started to take the keys away and do the hup, 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 that's when in my head I was just like breaking up. I was got broken up with or something like that earlier. But when you did that, then I made it that my mom is dying, which is such an interesting thing that like the mathematics in my head go like, if you're going to raise this kind of the silliness here, then I'm going to raise the seriousness here, you know? Because I felt like I wanted to like match how me jumping on my tippy toes, reaching for the keys, doesn't hit as hard if I'm just like, I lost my job. Like, let's go nuts. You're not giving me the keys to the car and I'm trying to see my dying mother. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's true. I think one thing that it took me a while to learn in comedy is that it's actually funnier if you're being dramatic. If you play a serious dramatic character and you let the context or the situation or the relationship be the comedy, play that dramatically. Don't play it tongue in cheek with, you know, knowing that you're playing a comedic character. The more serious and dramatic you play it, the funnier the comedy is going to be. It's kind of an inverse relationship.
Now, I'll push back a little bit, Jamie, because I would not say that guy is being dramatic in that moment. But I would also say that that guy doesn't have a justification to do that. And so I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, is that just sort of being a bit of a trickster to play a game kind of a thing? Is that what's going on in your head? Because you're not playing that moment for drama. I think we'd at least agree for that.
Yeah. Are you talking about my character or me or?
Well, you were playing your character in the moment where you decided to, first it sort of started with like, take the keys, right? Playing with like the idea that we can't see physicality, take the keys, take the keys, take the keys. And then it became like, oh, I'm actually like keeping the keys from him that he can't take them. But I wouldn't say that's a dramatic idea. And so I'm just kind of curious. I don't think you were also saying like, well, the reason why I'm doing that is because the last time that I wanted something from Chris, he had withheld a sandwich from me for lunch. So this is motivated by my character choice, right? And it just kind of, I just wanted you to speak to that for a second.
Yeah, no, it's, thank you for clarifying that. As I often do, I just played from a place of inspiration. I kind of caught myself stuttering for a quick second and I'm like, oh, and then I'm just like, oh, there we go. Okay. I'm just going to build on that. And it was really just playing from a moment of inspiration. I had no thought about where that scene was going, what that scene was about. To me, that's the audience's job to figure it out. And I'm just playing from inspiration and the scene goes where it goes, or it doesn't go where it doesn't go, and we move on to the next one.
And so, Sam, as my teacher brain in class, I stopped the scene and I'm like, Jamie, you got to tell us why you're doing that.
See, that drove me crazy. And well, so many teachers do that.
Of course. Because like, we need that justification for the bizarre behavior. I don't do that anymore. You know what I mean? I just don't do that. And the cool news is what I realize, it doesn't mean you can't. It's just up to you. Maybe the character, mm-hmm. maybe Jamie does want to explain to him this character why he's doing this. That's fine too. So I do like that, where it's not just a removal of it, but it certainly isn't a you must mm-hmm. justify your behavior. No, mm-hmm. you figure it out, audience, or don't.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's more fun for them. It's like, why is he doing that? Where is this coming from? And then, you know, let them put the story together on their own. Because first of all, it'll be more beautiful to them when they put it together themselves than if you spoon feed them. I think audiences are more creative than I think the performers are. And I think they're going to enjoy feeling smart. So let them figure it out. You know, it's a treat for the audience.
With our last few minutes here, I just want to bring up quickly. I was very gung ho about the full premise initiation for a long time, almost as a, I don't know if this is the right word, as like a snapback, as like a reaction to the two people walk out and look at the chairs, and then one moves the chair, and then one turns away, and then the other giggles. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, fucking get on with it. Now, I do like a marrying of those two, because I it's just not my cup of tea to sit there and watch you guys organically, slowly go through. Because I like slow play, but I like it with oomph, with some information, rather than just the, you know, you both know what I'm saying.
I mean, Chris, you have dinged us, it's probably me specifically, a number of times for, I think we call it sort of like that wandering energy, yes. Right? Where we come into a scene and we're kind of wandering and like we don't have a purpose. And what I think is so great about your, I'm just going to load you up with a word beforehand kind of a thing, is then you come into the scene with some kind of intention or drive or something. And that
it is
makes
so
all the
weird, Sam. Sorry to interrupt. It's so weird. Cause I don't know how it's going to look on stage. Well, I do know, but like just being face to face with on Zoom, there is a depth that reads. If you're I'm making this up right now. If I told you, Sam, to do a scene, but don't talk, but while you're not talking, think about how to make the best margarita possible. That there is like a, there, you know, that's just going on in your mind while you're being mm-hmm. silent. It is different than just the improviser who is blank, who is searching for what to say next versus the one that has something going on. There is mm-hmm. an energy that reads. And
I mean, you got to come out with something. And what I've found is that I don't need an opening to be inspired to start a scene. Because, I mean, I see my job during the week to consume media and read stuff. And, like, I should have my life experiences and all of this stuff locked and loaded so that the second someone says something, I can react to it in a way that's honest to me and that I'm bringing information that like I'm familiar with into the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love, again, we spoke about it a few episodes ago, playing from a place of inspiration rather than try to manufacture some kind of experience for the audience. And that's, I don't know how to articulate it specifically. I keep saying ham-fisted. I keep saying exposition. But that's really what it's about, is playing from inspiration rather than playing with an agenda.
That's it, dude. I'm 100% on board with you. Playing from a place of inspiration. And you know what that means? That means fucking pausing every now and then to fucking analyze, to ask yourself how you're feeling sometimes, right? Taking that time. When we're under the time constraint of a first beat, we know we have 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and we have nine people on the wings waiting to get on to do their scene. There's not a lot of time to move from a place of inspiration, Jamie. It's like, fill in the blanks, get out. Next person, fill in, right? If we're just doing a fucking Mad Libs based on the audience's suggestion or the information we found in the opening. I'm with you, dude. Move from a place of inspiration. It reads. We know. Even if it's not much, if you're not doing anything funny, I'm fucking in. I give a shit.
Woo. Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, Mad Libs are funny, but they lack depth. You know, they lack that next level, which I think is where I find a lot of interesting stuff. Sam, last word. Give it to us.
So I guess if both performers step out and they're each inspired, you don't even need an initiation.
Nope. I mean, theoretically, the inspiration would come from within their own being, their own mental state, their emotional state, what's in the room. And that's really, I think,
they've already initiated.
By being on stage.
Yes.
Being in the room.
1,000,000%. And you know, that's a really great point, Sam. And I know it was the last part, but I do want to say, I often will ding my students when they're in that neutral position, like a video game. I guess it's what you just said, Sam. But like sometimes I see them waiting to be told how to feel or what to do, rather than the initiation is the moment you take that step forward off that wall. Baby, we are in it. Oof. You know what? We say we don't fix shit here on the Comedy Fix.
We fixed it.
You know what's so funny is I feel like the first half of this episode was us being in neutral video game territory.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I finally feel like we finally found our scene at the end.
That's right. And this is one of the rare episodes that I think all three of us, for the most part, agree. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it plays to all of our wheelhouses, right? Where like it plays into you, Chris, who loves playing with that emotion and that realness. It plays to Jamie, where he likes to come from a place of inspiration. And it just plays into me liking to play, I think.
I think that's fair. Awesome. Let's wrap this up here. Sam, where can people find you liking to play?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at The Sam Miller. You can find me on Facebook, The Sam Miller Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, Samuel S. Miller. You can find me on Gmail, SamuelSMiller@gmail.com. I have a Slack, but no one belongs to it.
Okay. Jamie?
Yeah. I guess I'll be here on Tuesdays and Thursdays for the foreseeable future. But boy, oh boy, I'm looking forward to getting back in person, people.
Oh, I know. That's close. You can find me at Chris Alvarado. If you want to take one of my workshops to see what all this drama improv is all about, go to chris-alvarado.com/workshops. And as always, like Sam mentioned earlier, reach out to us. And you are, and we love it. So thank you. At The Comedy Fix on Instagram. Send us those messages. Send us your thoughts. Send us those emails. It really means the world to us. Bye, everybody.
Bye.